That's me on the podcast, sharing a song with something to say about it. With Thin Lear and Niagara Moon, losing my opinion.
I'm ready.
All right.
I'm fired on all cylinders. I have never felt more energetic.
Glad to hear you're doing well there, Thin Lear.
I didn't say I was doing well. I said I was energetic. So.
Potato, potato.
Not that.
I wanted to share a message I got just today, as a matter of fact. Previous guest of ours, our dear friend Abigail DeVoe, she reached out. She said, "Hey, just shooting you a message to say my All Things Must Pass listening overlapped with my exercise routine.
Get out of here.
I have now listened to My Sweet Lord during a workout. I'm sorry I ever doubted you. It won't happen again."
Come on.
Abby.
Well, geez, I guess I got to try it now.
Fuck you, man. Knew all along.
I trust Abby's judgment more than yours with this, so maybe I should try it. Does that extend to any other tracks on All Things Must Pass or just that one?
Chris, just to loop you in here, I'm arguing that several tracks from All Things Must Pass make for a great cardio workout playlist.
Well, I could chime in with my personal favorite song from that album, which now that I think of it, probably does make a good workout song, and that's Awaiting on You All.
Ah, that's next on the list. You got it. Yeah.
Kind of chugs along.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows Harrison was really into cardio, and that was actually a big motivation for that record.
Yep.
The making of it, inspiration behind it was just him burning off those calories.
I can see that.
He was always the skinniest of the Beatles, wasn't he? Right?
He certainly wanted to run away from them by the end. That's true.
Well, but then he had that song about chocolates, the Savoy Truffle. Oh. I think that was like his cheat song.
Yeah, that's about a cheat day.
Now we're getting into it.
That's his cheat day song. You might have noticed a third voice, listener, on this podcast that we'll introduce in a second. Should we introduce the podcast first or the guest first?
Let's introduce the guest. Let's bring him in here.
Yeah. Today we have a return guest. He is a Massachusetts-based music writer. He's a music fan. And I think more importantly than all of that, he's a true blue music supporter. And I don't think that music fan, music critic, and music supporter all necessarily align, but they do in this person. He writes for Pop Matters. He's a contributing editor over there. He's written for a number of other publications. And he's just a fella that immerses himself in scenes old and new. We'd like to welcome back Mr. Chris Ingalls. Chris, good to have
you guys.
Back.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back. I've been looking forward to this ever since the first time I was here. So, which is, I think, maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah. It's been a little
something
while.
Something like that. But yeah, really enjoyed it and really excited to be back. So thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming back on. Sure. To our esteemed, highly celebrated.
Is it?
Of course. Music Opinion Podcast, Losing My Opinion. I am Roger Waters segment awaiting.
Oh, shit.
Indie artist Niagara Moon, a.k.a. Thomas Irwin.
I am Roger Waters segment not having indie artist Thin Lear, a.k.a. Matt Longo. So look, let's just say up front, Chris, I don't know if you're aware of this, but we had a game a few months back where I brought in songs I thought Thomas would hate. He brought in songs he thought I'd love, which I think says a lot about our personalities and how we interact with each other.
He chose to make it that way, by the way. That was his rules.
You got to spice it up. And I lost by a narrow margin, but I lost.
Lost the contest.
Lost the contest. Yeah. So my punishment was he gets to choose a segment that I have to do. So he chose that I have to listen to Roger Waters' solo discography and choose my least favorite songs as punishment. So I have not done that, though. I was supposed to do it for today. I want to say I was busy, but I'll be honest, I probably could have found the time to do it.
Yeah.
I just didn't because it seemed like such a drag.
It's a punishment, bro. I want you to be taken away from your lovely wife and daughter, and you got to sit in your basement and just play album after album in the dark.
Always have to be in the dark.
Till your eyes glaze over.
You haven't chosen the songs yet, or you haven't even listened?
I haven't even listened.
He hasn't done nothing.
I have to begin this journey. And not only did he say I have to Like, I have to pick songs. I have to pick my least favorites. So I have to focus on the ones that I don't like.
Oh, wow.
Skip the half-decent ones. Yeah.
Does the Final Cut count, or is that...
He's not counting.
Final Cut is great and does not count because it technically... But it should count, but it doesn't.
Agreed on all counts there.
Well, I'd love to... I'm happy to shave another 12 or however many songs off of my list. So, yeah, I'll take it. But I will... I swear to you, I will have it by next week. I'll have my assignment in.
Oh, man.
And I will get high marks.
Wow.
And it will be painful. Oh, maybe not. Maybe I'll love it. But I don't love half the tracks on the wall. So I feel like I am going to have problems.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a custom-made punishment. I figure you'd have a harder time with it than a lot of other people I know.
This is a special room in hell for me. Yes.
Does it include the his remake of Dark Side of the Moon?
Didn't even know that existed, and please don't tell him about it.
Wait, so you didn't know about this?
What? So it's Dark Side of the Moon with only Roger Waters?
Yes, he reissued it. He basically made it as a solo album, and I haven't really heard it, but from what I understand, it's a lot of just kind of like very low register growling vocals. Like, it's basically like if a grumpy old man re-recorded an album that he made 50 years ago, which is exactly what it is.
Oh, my God.
So, I think you should throw that into the mix.
Oh, that's just sacrilege, though, to do that, like, when you were with a group. Like, that was a group effort, that album. That's like Paul McCartney re-recording Revolver without Ringo, by the way. Like, what?
Sounds like something. It's not that, but think about that. Sounds kind of like something Paul
would do. He might do something like that. But he'd be nicer about it up front, you know?
He would loop Ringo in. Come on.
Right, I'm just going to nip in there and just redo this.
You know, Ringo, if you want to join me, you can.
I always could play your drum parts, but you know, if you want to stop by.
Peace and love.
Oh, God.
Oh, well, that sounds like quite a task.
Yep. Yes. Well, now you just added another album, so thank you for that. And it doesn't sound like a good one either. It wasn't a highly recommended one.
You can't fuck with the classics like that, even if
they're yours.
Yeah, no, that was a band effort. Come on,
that's it's such a beloved thing that it's not his anymore. You know, it hasn't been his since it exploded. I mean, we could argue about like when the art starts to not become the artist anymore. Some people would say as soon as someone else hears it, as soon as it comes out. 20 years on, if it's a legacy record, I would argue that it's in the public lexicon now. It's just not, there's nothing you can do to it to change the way people think about it other than just, fucking it up.
I agree.
Anyhow, speaking of fucking it up, what is your segment today, Thomas?
Oh, nice transish. Nice little segue. Yes, so the whole premise of the show, we got two segments. We trade off leading a group discussion, sharing songs with a particular argument or topic we've decided to explore. Everybody else has no idea what to expect. We're all coming in blind. Of course, that's when you choose to take a sip of water. So we lose the sound effect.
Oh. Oh, the surprise sound?
Ooh, that was nice.
Good one, yeah. Yeah.
Nice timbre to it. So I'm leading the first segment, then we're going to hand it off to Mr. Ingles. So last week I talked about Paolo Conte, right?
Like last week.
My main man. Now we're not going to talk about him this week, although...
I'm still looking at a picture of him on your screen, so...
Chris and I were talking about him before the record. I would still love to talk about him, all episode long. But as they say in Hollywood, you got to do one for you, one for them. So today's a one for them, one for all you. I'm going to talk about something you all want to talk about and listen to.
Finally.
Yeah. I make concessions where I have to. But the music that I'm going to show today, I like it. I'm a fan. Gun to my head, I'm a fan of this band. But I do have to think about it for a second. I can sometimes be a skeptic of this group. And I certainly understand the concerns, the voicings of people who are not a fan of this band. I'm kind of coming at it from that angle also, but let's cut to the chase. I'm talking about The Who.
Okay.
The Who, like them or not, where do we all stand here?
Like them.
Oh yeah, like them. Right. I mean, we talked about them a few times only in relation to a single performance. We talked about their Rock and Roll Circus performance several times on this podcast, but I don't think
You talked about listening to Won't Get Fooled Again at the gym. Also a great track for the gym.
That's a good workout song. Come on.
All these workout albums I'm loving.
Yeah, we're just a real fit group of podcasters.
Yeah, especially Keith Moon, because, he was a real...
health nut.
Health nut.
He was an athlete. Yeah.
Yeah. Car water polo. Yeah.
Parkour. He's a parkour guy.
He's a parkour guy.
Hotel parkour.
No, I love The Who.
All right, you love The Who.
The Who is a very, very early discovery for me. I mean, I think I mentioned this before without hijacking your subject here. I have three older siblings, and when I was in like kindergarten, first grade, or whatever, my sisters were in high school, and so I kind of grew my introduction to music listening was their music, and Who's Next was very early. I think my sister got Tommy when I was very young, and I think she got Who's Next when I was probably about 5 or 6, and so that takes me back. But I think a lot of their music, Who's Next in particular, it still stands mm-hmm. up, I think, definitely. And that's an example, but and other stuff of theirs stands up too. And you know, I overall I'm a fan. I think Townsend is a fantastic songwriter, etc. So yeah. I'm definitely a fan.
I agree with that completely. I'd say Tommy, The Who Sell Out, Who's Next, those three records are sort of unimpeachable for me. I think Quick One, While He's Away, is also really, really solid.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody talks about how amazing Keith Moon's drumming is. And yes, it is. But he's a drummer that I feel like maybe wouldn't work outside of the context of this band. I mean, he's, you know, he's such a wild man that, like, you got John Entwistle there with him. Like, that's an insane rhythm section. But would Keith Moon work yeah. without that interplay? I don't know, because it's so chaotic. But like that's one of the all-time rhythm sections there. And Live at Leeds is like right up at the top of some of the greatest live albums ever made.
All right. I like The Who. I don't think – well, sometimes I love The Who. You can't deny that was quite a – group of guys, quite a lot of talent brewing in that quartet. They have several moments that are just undeniable. I mean, Who's Next is one of the all-time great rock albums. I'm not the biggest rock guy. I don't play guitar. I don't seek out loud.
You're not windmilling?
I'm not windmilling. I'm not putting dynamite in my kick drum.
Really, who is?
Yeah, who's windmilling these days?
So, you know, I'm tepid towards the likes of, you know, Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin. There's plenty of bigger fans of those kind of groups than I'm going to be. I'd rather talk about Palo Conte. But Who's Next? You can't fuck with it. So what I want to do today is show, like, the some of the foundations of my appreciation of The Who. Like, these are moments I can point to and be like, yep, can't argue. These guys have something special. This is my Who. This is, like, the appeal I would make to a Who skeptic. I'll get into more negatives later. I don't want to front load the more disparaging opinions I might have. But let's listen to one of my favorite and I believe underrated tracks from Who's Next, a great moment for the band. I did hear the song at the gym in recent memory. It fucking kicks ass.
Chris, any song you talk about, you have to say if you have heard it at one point at a gym. Just so you know.
Rate it based on workout.
Yeah, you have to. I'm sorry. Sure, okay. It has to be. Yeah.
Continue. No, no problem. It has to be that way. So my wife, just going to get ahead of both of you on that. The one Entwistle song where I'm like, wait, why didn't this guy write tons more songs and have a bigger role in the group? Yeah. And then you hear, I don't know, like Boris the Spider, and you're like, oh, okay. But I don't know. I'm a huge fan of my wife. You guys, you guys like my wife?
I like the way he delivers it. I like his cadence on that song.
Yeah. I love the lyrics too. It's basically like,
it's kind of cute.
Yeah.
It's tongue in cheek. Let's check out My Wife, which isn't even, a lot of people wouldn't even think of as necessarily a highlight from this album, which just speaks to the strength of Who's Next. But let's listen to John Entwistle. Give it his all here. One of the great all-time bassists. He plays horns on this track. I don't know if we'll get to that point in the song, yeah. But just certainly a musically accomplished guy.
Yeah, what is it with insane bass players also playing horns? You got Flea. Isn't that a similar kind of thing? Where he's like a trumpet guy, and he's also a bass virtuoso?
Yeah, he plays trumpet, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
John Entwistle has one of my all-time favorite quotes related to music, where he's being asked about his interest in metal. I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, oh, I think I only like it if I'm the one playing it. It's a bit like smelling your own farts.
That's not the official Losing My Opinion position, folks.
Yeah, I don't like playing metal. Great weird chords in this one.
Love that snare slapback.
Very slappy.
That track and Going Mobile, I think, are the two songs that surprised me the most when I first listened to that record. Because that's like, Chris, I don't know if you feel this way, but it was one of those records where I felt like I heard those songs 100 times before I actually dug into it. And of course, I appreciated the hits more when I listened to it in the context of the record. But like those two were like, oh, these are super strong songs that I've never heard before.
I think that Who's Next is one of those albums. It's kind of like Blood on the Tracks in that there's no bad songs. In my opinion, there's no bad songs. There's some songs I like more than others, but there's nothing on there that I'm like, I don't care for this. And I Going Mobile, one of the things I love about that song is the synth, you know, with the envelope filter or whatever it is. Cause it, you know, that album, it has so many moments. A lot of them have to do with the keyboards and everything that it sounds so futuristic. It's hard to believe that it's from like 1971. You know, it sounds like something that you would hear today.
Totally.
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if that was like a new album. My wife, I think one of the things that I love about that song is that one of my favorite lines is going to buy a tank and an aeroplane if she catches up with me and won't be no time to explain. Cause it's like, it's so over the top. It's like, it's not like, I think I'm going to lay low and go and stay in a motel. It's just like, I got to buy military grade equipment because this woman's insane. I like how over the top the song is, and it's just got a good groove to it.
Totally.
And Keith is just, you know, awesome in it as always. So
really lets everybody shine. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we're all smiling here, having a good time. I am going to get the negatives out of the way here. This is my platform. I'm going to speak my truth. As an album, I've always felt like Tommy kind of fucking sucks.
What?
I don't know where you... There's so many tracks on that album.
There's a lot.
Where it's like, what?
But there's a lot of interstitial stuff. I don't know how many of them you could call like songs, you know?
The narrative, the Acid Queen, like nothing fucking adds up for me.
Yeah, I don't
about that album.
I'm not going to defend the narrative. But the songs...
There's so much fucking filler in that album. It'd be Pinball Wizard.
I'm sorry, you have a problem with Fiddle About.
Fiddle About. Hey, that's another Ant Whistle tune there.
Good God.
At least that one knows what it is, which is fucking terrible. But Pinball Wizard has always rubbed me the wrong way. I don't understand why that's one of the band's biggest hits.
That's fair. I don't love
it. I like it, but I like Pinball Wizard, but I don't think it's as good as its popularity. You know what I mean? It's I'm with you there.
Yeah. It verges towards the Emerson, Lake and Palmer kind of thing. You know, that sort of jangly welcome friends sort of sound.
Have you guys done an ELP show? Because I'm
we can do another one. That was one of our earliest episodes. Yeah, we only listen to Love Beach.
I don't wanna
Love Beach.
Oh no, I'm not listening. I've never listened to that, and I never will.
You're not missing much.
In Long Beach.
So
we're getting off track.
We are, because now I want to also say I don't get the Who sell out at all. That
what?
One also just goes over my fucking head.
That might be my favorite.
You're nuts. I don't get that one at all.
I can see for miles. You don't like that song?
I like that's on that album. You know what the problem is? I got crossover from Meaty, Beady, Big and Bouncy, whatever, like the compilation.
Yeah.
I like that compilation of like their more kind of radio-friendly hits. The Who Sell Out, but all those skits and the interstitial stuff and the Armenia City in this glass. I don't know what the fuck is going on with that album. It's never clicks.
You
with
don't
me.
Like Odorono? That song is...
No,
great.
Not at all. I can't, no. Fuck that shit.
I love that song.
So... There's that. The Who by Numbers seems pretty limp. I don't know, Squeezebox. That song's always annoyed me.
I actually like that album a lot. I think it's an underrated gem, but that's just me.
So I
but this is your platform.
This is my I shall speak.
Chris, you can tell this guy he's wrong all day.
No, it's differences of opinion. I like it. I discovered that album late, and I really like it. But yeah, you know,
I have less animosity towards that one than the ones that Thin Lear loves. Here's something I don't get, Chris. Now we can turn on Matt. He was shitting on Quadrophenia. That's like that. My second favorite.
Okay.
Where do we sit on Quadrophenia? Am I alone on this one?
You know what? The thing about Quadrophenia, and I hate to admit this, is that I don't have as much of a familiarity with that album as I do a lot of the others. I know there's, you know, like 515, yep, which is, I think, is yeah, a great song, and The Real Me.
Yes.
There's some really good songs on that. I'm not a fan of Love Rain Over Me, but I appreciate it. I think it's a good album. I think that there's a lot of people out there who consider it their best album. I would never go that far, but I think it's solid. Mm.
This is like kind of same how I feel about The Wall. You know, where it's not like I hate The Wall. It's just it feels like a long EP would suit its purposes. You know, there's like 6 to 7 songs. I'm like, I love these, and I feel sort of similar about Quadrophenia, where it's like it's almost one great record in my mind. And the narrative definitely makes more sense than Tommy.
It's a very good narrative.
I don't know if you've ever heard Eddie Vedder does a version of Love Rain Over Me. That's like, I'm not a huge Pearl Jam guy, but damn, he sings the hell out of that song.
And they've covered Bob O'Reilly too, but then again, I think everybody has.
It's another great tune.
Are you going to talk about the Joe Perry skit?
What?
The Joe Perry skit. You ever see the Joe Perry skit?
No.
You can watch it. You should check it out.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll put it on the list. Well, here's the thing about Quadrophenia. Earlier on, I was like, I should just talk about that album only, defend it against this Philistine here. It is a bit long. I liked it a lot more in my youth than I might enjoy it now in terms of like listening all the way through. It's got a lot of long instrumental passages that I still, it's near and dear to my heart, but I can't do a play all the way through. But I love all the tracks that Chris mentioned. I even love Bellboy is a lot of fun to me and like the place it has in the story. Dirty Jobs is great, Sea and Sand. What I wanted to play now, probably my favorite moment for the album, I wanted to play I've Had Enough. I don't know if you two are familiar with this tune.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. I love I love this song. I love, like, there's a certain part of it, especially, like, in the middle, and that's where I'll pick things up here. But it's like, again, when I try to remind myself that The Who, you know, aren't just a super machismo, you know, loud, obnoxious, ridiculous rock opera group, like, it's moments like these. I'm like, yeah, these guys had a lot of depth. This is what I would bring to a Who skeptic. So we're going to listen to a little bit of I've Had Enough from Quadrophenia, 1973.
That's kind of like what makes the band, I think, even more interesting than some of their contemporaries and maybe endure longer is that push and pull between like the really machismo approach of Roger Daltrey and the so not that approach of Pete Townsend.
For sure. I'm not the biggest Daltrey fan. I struggle with it.
As a vocalist or just as a human being?
Vocalist. I haven't looked into it with the human being stuff, but I'm sure, you know.
He's a bit of a conservative, by the way. It was just something I only discovered fairly recently. Yeah, he's a bit of a, I don't know if he's like anti-vax or anything, but he's a bit of a good old-fashioned lad.
Seems like he could be a little prickly pear. Yeah, he's like some ancient, like craggy British dude from the 40s. Like, yeah, I'm sure I'm not going to agree with all his opinions. But even just in his heyday, his whole vibe and the goof, like just his stage presence, I'm like, eh, this is
come on, you don't want
well with me.
Those rockin' ass
Listomania and all that shit. What?
He's kind of a cartoony rock star. Yeah. I get it. And the thing about Townsend is that as a frontman, he's totally goofy, and that's what I love about him. I mean, if you see the live footage of them and the kids are all right with the lasers and everything, that gig, he's just like a total goofball. And I prefer that to Daltrey, but that's just, you know, that goes along with my personality.
I'm totally with you on that. The whole like synthesizer wizard aspect of Townsend is really intriguing to me. Like him in the studio, he was quite a mind.
He's a dork. I love it.
Anywho, we're going to go to, I'm going to cue this up again here now. We got I've Had Enough from Quadrophenia, 73. Thin Lear's wrong. Let's enjoy. Here we go.
Rain on me.
all about that banjo.
Had enough of living, had enough of dying, had enough of smiling, had enough of crying, taking all the high roads I've squandered and I've saved. I've had enough of childhood, I've had enough of graves. I've had enough of living, I've had enough of dying, I've had enough of smiling, I've had enough of crying.
I always like when the two of them harmonize.
Taking all the high roads I've squandered and I've saved. I've had enough of childhood, I've had enough of grades.
I'm getting a shrug from Mr. Longo.
Chris, what do you say?
You're asking me. Oh, you know, it's funny. I haven't heard this album in its entirety in a very, very long time. And that includes this song. And I it's almost like I forgot. When you were asking us about the song, I had a very non-committal answer because I didn't want to say, I don't really remember that song, but okay. but I have to tell you, I like that a lot. I really do. It's very sort of, it's very melodic. I love the callback, or maybe it's the what's the opposite of a callback? Love Rain Over Me is later. So it's almost
an oft-recurring motif that you get the full version of in the finale.
I like that. I really do. I don't know what else to say. It's a very nice melody, and I think one of the things about Quadrophenia that, and I think this is true with a lot of the, you know, like Tommy's the same way, is that, you know, there's a lot of light and shade, and this is, you know, certainly miles away from the real me, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of variety. So Matt is seething. I can tell.
Yeah, two against one.
I like it too. I like that song. You know, it's
I'll do
just
you now.
The you know, you're picking the highlights. I mean, you said it's too long,
of which there were many. I named a lot of songs.
There's some good ones. But I think it's a strong EP. It's like a 7-track.
Oh, it's a great single album. 50%. Yeah.
I'm almost with you there.
And it's a mediocre second half. But, you know, it's the narrative in its entirety, you know, especially if you're getting into Who for the first time. I think it is worth checking out all the way through. But your mileage may vary. So, all right. I got one more track to share with y'all. The Who... they burned bright, but they burned relatively brief, I would say. Like, their golden era was maybe 10 years. And then, you know, Keith Moon passed. It's too bad they couldn't generate more hits or more immersive concept albums after a while. But even into the 80s, sometimes they shine. Sometimes you get some really cool moments. And there's one track in particular I think is always going to rank near the top of the heap for me. I've always really liked Eminence Front.
Okay. Yeah, that's a deli song right there. I have strong memories of slicing ham listening to that on Q104.3.
That is a ringing endorsement. I'm more of an if we're talking about It's Hard, I'm more of an Athena guy, but that's just me.
I'm going to be honest. I don't recall the rest of the album too well, but this one always stuck out to me. I'll have to check out Athena.
was the other hit. That was the other single, but anyway.
That's an exceptional album title. Really.
It's Hard?
It's Hard. Yeah. Just
It's Hard.
Really.
Well, when that album came out, I think I was like 13, and me and my friends were all just like,
it's Hard. That's probably the goal.
Meaty, beady, big, and bouncy.
Anywho.
A quick one while he's away. Yeah, I'm sensing a theme here. So it's like you totally do not have Keith Moon, obviously. But I'm like, well, they could have gotten into something cool without him. You know, I don't know why it did. I guess, are the Pete Townsend solo albums really good? I never really checked his stuff out.
They're mostly pretty good. I like Empty Glass, which is up there behind me. And then I also actually am a big fan of the horribly titled All the Best Cowboys Have Chinese Eyes, which was a long time ago. It's a spotty career, I will say that. But a lot of it is really good. When you think about the fact that he was the primary songwriter and these are all his songs, you know, it's almost like a continuation of The Who without, you know, Keith Moon or whatever. But I think overall they're pretty good.
Well, maybe I'll steadily dip my toes into that. But for now, I'm all about Eminence Front. The song plays for like 2 minutes before the vocals start, so I'm going to have to cut in part of the way here.
But they call a long ramp, as they say in the radio biz.
Oh, it's a great ramp. It's a great vibe.
It's an Eminence Front. It's a put on.
Is the song started yet?
You're going to tell me you don't like his fringe jacket, rocking abs, crazy tan. He looks like he stepped out of the future into like Woodstock. He doesn't look like anybody else on stage.
Are you talking about Daltrey?
Talking about Daltrey.
Who else would we be talking about?
Have you ever seen a more in shape guy at Woodstock?
I don't need my musicians to be in shape. I'm not looking for physical stamina.
We're talking about George Harrison's workout album.
That's for me. I'm in shape with his music. He doesn't need to be in shape. We do have the same build, though, me and Georgie.
That's true.
All right. Eminence Front, it's a put on.
I feel like I should be counting money.
Yeah.
It's like a counting money montage song.
Yeah, yeah. I need those things that flip the bills.
I gotta tell you, I also love the cover.
It is a cool cover.
I'm sorry, I think
it's good.
It's very much of its time.
Great font.
They look like lawyers.
Yeah. Cocaine lawyers. Love that synth.
Where do you stand with Who Are You, the album?
I forgot about that one. I like that song. It's very goofy. I do not really remember. That's kind of like it's hard. Like I don't remember the rest of the tracks on it. Are there any standouts?
It does have one of my favorite Ent Whistle songs, 905,
oh,
which is kind of like a science fiction keyboard heavy. Anyway, it's a really weird song, but it's like kind of catchy and I like it.
Check that one out.
And there's actually two Ent Whistle songs on that album. I think Trick of the Light is another one. I think it's a good album. You know, it doesn't rank among their best, but I think it's got some great moments on it. It was Keith's final, his last hurrah.
And you know, to that end, I will earnestly revisit the Who by Numbers. I'll see if I can find any tracks I might dig on that one.
Cool.
But yeah, I've shown you and the world some of my favorite moments from this band.
They're far more interesting than most classic rock bands. You know, I'll say that about them. I think for
a lot of facets.
Some of the reasons we're talking about, I mean, I think just the rhythm section is just kind of unlike anything. And it's, you know, you hear it and it's sort of ubiquitous sound now and people try to replicate it. But like when you hear those two guys in whatever, it's not the pocket. Like whatever thing they're creating together,
yeah.
Like there's just nothing like it. I mean, I hear those first three bass notes of Live at Leeds, and it's just like, you know, it is a chaotic rumble like nothing else, and it kind of doesn't have a lot to do with Pete Townsend or Roger Daltrey.
I think in other bands' hands, that rhythm section might be a disaster. Yeah. But what's good about it is that, you know, like I said before, Townsend is an amazing songwriter. So they were behind some really great songs. It wasn't just a bunch of flailing behind, like, you know, it wasn't like the Chili Peppers.
That's a whole different episode. Yeah, they could have just been like a jammy band, and yet he kept them tight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got all the, yeah, super ambitious concepts and the synthesizer keyboard work and the yeah. ornate vocal harmonies. And just, yeah, it's one thing after another. It's a big stew of musical pie. I want to end that sentence and ask Chris, what have you been listening to this week?
Losing my opinion.
I have written some reviews of some new albums that I think are really quite good. There's an album by a singer-songwriter named Hannah Francis. Her album is called Keeper of the Shepherd. It's on Ruination Records, which is a Brooklyn-based label that is known for just putting out terrific music. Kind of folky, sort of like Nick Drake meets, Joni Mitchell, a little avant-garde almost. Highly, highly recommend that album. It's terrific. And The Bloom of Performance by a Paris-based, Chicago-raised guy named Mark Trecca. It's kind of, if you're into late period Scott Walker or like Berlin era, ooh, David Bowie, sort of that
Matt's
sort of
attention.
Haunting.
That's getting my attention. It's raising my hackles.
I would definitely recommend that if you're into those things. I also, it hasn't come out yet, but I wrote a retrospective review of one of my favorite albums by one of my favorite bands, Oranges and Lemons by XTC, which turns... It turns 35. It turned 35 last week. So I wrote a retrospective review. I'm a huge fan of the band. I'm pretty sure you guys have talked about them here before. And one of my favorite albums of theirs. And so I
it's
did
my favorite, yeah.
re-listen to that album quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. And it's has not lost an ounce of its power. I think it's terrific. It's not my favorite of theirs, but it's up there.
Yeah.
I'm also writing a retrospective review of Queen 2, which turns 50 this week, which is an album I have a complicated history with, but overall I love it. It turns 50 on Friday, the same day I turn 55, so we kind of share that.
Similar paths.
Similar path. Yes, exactly. We've basically gone on the same path all this time. But yeah, I don't know if how familiar you are with that album, but it's basically their full on prog rock album.
Does that have Killer Queen on it?
No, that's on Sheer Heart Attack, which is the next album.
Okay. That's the one with the very dramatic lighting, right? And the four of them.
That's the one that's got the cover that they recreated for the Bohemian Rhapsody video. The only single on that album was a song called Seven Seas of Rye, which I don't think charted in the States.
I like that song. That's really fast.
Yeah. It's a great, over-the-top, crazy album. But I'll be writing about that this week, so hopefully that'll be out in a couple of days.
Wow.
One more I should mention, because I think it's probably going to be one of my favorites of the year whenever they do the year-end lists. Mary Halverson, the jazz guitarist, made an album that came out in January called Cloudward, which is a jazz sextet album that's a little bit atonal and really, really great. It's on Nonesuch. Definitely recommend that one. So that's... Those are the big ones.
Hell yeah.
That's some exciting sounding stuff. Those are good pitches too. Sometimes when we ask people what they're listening to, they're like, I like this record. You know, Chris, like he's like a publicist when he gives you the highlights and, you know, you get what you need.
Well, I read so many press releases that it's kind of got, like seeped into my brain. So it's like, it is a pastoral pastiche of atonal post-punk. I put it through the, PR AI generator. There.
You got to have some alliteration in there. Yeah,
you got to use the word angular.
Angular.
So, Chris, that is indeed an awesome array of artists and albums you just listed. But what indeed is your segment for this week?
Well, I wanted to talk about an artist who I feel does not get enough recognition, at least in our country. Someone who is quite the superstar and is native UK and has had quite an illustrious career as a member of other bands, but over the past 30 plus years as a solo artist. It's funny, we had talked about The Who. This is someone who was heavily influenced by The Who, among other artists, and that is Paul Weller, who is one of my personal favorite artists, but someone who is, I think, sort of a complete artist in that he has... He's worked in a number of different styles through the different bands that he's been in, but also as a solo artist, he's constantly experimented with often amazing results. And I don't know how much background I need to delve into here, but
we are encyclopedic on this show, you know, so Yeah, the
Paul Weller.
All right, I'll get in the weeds.
See the guy.
He's not the guy from RoboCop. That's Peter Weller. Honest mistake.
Is that the guy from The Jam?
It's the guy from The Jam. Yeah. So he was from 1977 to 1982, that's generally when The Jam were a band. So they're a trio that consisted of Paul on vocals, guitar, and the primary songwriter, Bruce Foxton on bass, and Rick Buckler on drums. They made a number of different solo albums, a number of different albums from 77 to 82. And they sort of embraced kind of a punk sound, but they were also influenced by like 60s bands like The Who. And also had a great love for American soul music. And as their career progressed, they began to experiment a little bit more. I kind of like to think of them as, in a way, kind of like The Clash did, where they started putting in like horns and started kind of, you know, experimenting with like reggae and stuff like that. And, you know, they, even in their early days, they covered songs like they covered In the Midnight Hour, like a real punk version, and they covered like Heat Wave by Martha and the Vandellas, and then they would cover like Curtis Mayfield in concert, like they did Move On Up, a really good version of that. But as their career progressed, they became a little bit more sophisticated in their arrangements with horns and stuff like that. One of their biggest hits was A Town Called Malice, which is on their last album, The Gift.
That's the one I know. I only know the big hits.
Yeah. And that's like a total like Motown ripoff in the best possible way. And that's kind of where Weller was headed before he broke the band up at the height of their popularity in 1982 and then formed this band called The Style Council, which was much more pop, soul, jazz. I could play. I think we have a Jam song.
All right.
This is a song from the second Jam album, which is called This Is the Modern World. And this song is called The Modern World. And it's a little bit of an example of the sort of early kind of punk stuff that they were starting out with. It's definitely more of a aggressive type track that's very indicative of their early stuff.
I'll cue it up here. Yeah, why are The Jam not on my radar? Everything you've said so far, I'm like, that sounds great. I want to check that out. Cool, cool, cool.
Well,
they never quite made it over here. Why do I only know A Town Called
Malice?
They
never quite made it over here. And one thing I will say about them that is unfortunate is that early in their career, they were very poorly promoted into the U.S. to the extent that they were put on a tour where they were in the States where they were opening for Blue Oyster Cult. So apparently nobody knew what the fuck they were doing.
The fuck is that pairing? No offense to Blue Oyster Cult.
And no offense at all. They're just totally different audiences. And I'm pretty sure they got booed off stage quite a lot. It's kind of like when Prince opened for the Stones back in the early 80s. They were like, yeah, not for us.
Yeah, the Stones should open for Prince.
Yeah.
I said it. I'm excited to check this out. I just pictured The Jam. I picture like a ton of energy, like just rhythmic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This song will scratch that itch, as they say.
All right. All right. So a Paul Weller celebration today. I like it.
Yeah.
So here we go. We got The Modern World from 1977.
This is a modern world. This is the modern world. What kind of fool do you think I am?
You can kind of hear a little bit of the Who influence there.
It's very mod.
Very mod, yeah.
The teachers have said I'd be the thing. This is a modern world that I've learned about. This is a modern world. We don't need no one to tell us what's a right.
Yeah, they have that amphetamine snarl.
Yeah.
This is a modern world.
So again, the sound kind of evolved into a little bit more sophisticated, but
yeah, these are young guys here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Weller was 19 when they made their first record, and this is, I think, their second record.
I know it's like a it's like a clunky reference, but I hear like a lot of early Arctic Monkeys when I hear them. Like this is so like wonderfully British, you know? And I think that's part of why it maybe didn't click with American audiences. It's like that very British kind of rock.
You're absolutely right. They were very British and they tackled British topics, British politics. Although, you know, the way I look at that, why I think that's kind of odd that that was a sticking point is the fact that the Clash were very British. And I think people definitely embraced the Clash in the States. And I often make parallels between the Jam and the Clash because there are a lot of similarities, especially when you think about how they sort of broaden their sound, you know, the Clash did with like Sandinista and stuff like that. So, but that's kind of what happened with the Jam. And he, you know, Paul decided, like, I want to do different stuff. I want to broaden things even more outside of the confines of a three-piece band. So that's when he formed the Style Council with Mick Talbot, who's a keyboard player, and then brought in a couple other people. And they were around from 83 to about 89. And interestingly enough, the closest thing Paul Weller ever had to a top 40 U.S. hit was a Style Council song in 84, called My Ever-Changing Moods, which hit like 25 on the pop charts, as opposed to in the UK, where they basically had, you know, hit after hit after hit. I think the Jam fans were slow to take to this band because it was such a different sound, but they embraced it anyway, because I think they had fallen in love with Paul Weller as a songwriter. I mean, they were huge over there. I mean, Style Council played at Live Aid, which is,
That's
I mean, big. It was at Wembley. You know, so I don't even know if it was televised in the States, but anyway, that's just an example of how far, you know, how far they got and how, you know, incredibly popular they were. Just for a contrast, if you wanted to play, I think we have My Ever-Changing Moods, which is definitely miles away from what you just heard. A lot more pop, a little more soulful, kind of a bit of an 80s feel, but not in the cringy way.
You know, I think a listener of the show might have recommended this group to me after our Sophistopop episode. I think these guys are in the...
Yeah, you could put them in there, sure. Also very British, British politics, a lot of the stuff, which probably accounted for them, you know, sinking over here. But again, My Ever-Changing Moods was a minor hit here. Right. So I don't know if you would recognize it. But.
Let's see if I do. And this is from 1984.
Yeah.
The Style Council, great name for a band. Mm. Let's do it up. I like this. Oh, yeah.
Another Lauren Lamp.
What is that bass synth? Kicks ass. This kind of sound, this kind of band, I want all Ramp. I'm all about the Ramp. I'm a fan of this kind of production.
This is a song that can make a big comeback on like TikTok, I feel. You know? It's just
primed for a meme.
I see the next generation discovering this, because there's a lot of music now that is very popular that I think has elements of this.
Yeah, and they some of their stuff is like this. Some of it is a lot jazzier. They did some instrumental stuff. I mean, they were truly experimenting. But by I think 1989, they were without a record deal, and I think they kind of fizzled out. And that's when Paul Weller said, "I think I'm going to make solo albums now." And I think he made his first solo album in 92, and he's been making them ever since. He's about to release his 17th album. It's coming out in May on his 66th birthday, and the album is actually called 66. So what's interesting about Weller's career, his solo career, in which where I find it's probably the most fulfilling, is that I think with age comes wisdom, and he's decided that I'm not going to be constrained by punk. I'm not going to be constrained by sophistopop. So he kind of threw it all in there, and it's mostly kind of a more of a heavier rock sound, but it's still got that like soul influence. So 92 is his first solo album. And one of the things that's interesting about what he's doing as a solo artist is that he is constantly moving forward. And some of the stuff that he's done has been very experimental. He's done some real kind of psychedelic stuff. You know, the Who influence has never really left. He's the Beatles influence has never really left. So he kind of like throws all that stuff in there. One of the songs that I have lined up is from an album. His second album is called Wildwood. It came out in 93. And I think that it shows that he had influences that go past the punk stuff and the Who and the stuff that's really sort of what you would expect from him. And he's even like in interviews, he's name checked people like Crosby, Stills and Nash. And I think that, you know, as a 19-year-old punk rocker in 1978 or something, he probably wouldn't be caught dead.
Listening to,
you know,
Sweet Blue Eyes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So he's sort of like putting it all out there. He's like, this is what I like. This is me. And he doesn't really have any sort of inhibitions about kind of like putting his influences out there. So there's a more of a guitar sound. It's a little bit more rocking, but it's also still pretty soulful. So Wildwood has a song called Sunflower that I think is the first song in the album. And that's a pretty good indication of kind of where he was at in the 90s. So maybe we could just hear a snippet of that.
Let's do it up. I like this narrative of just like constant evolution.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's pretty accurate.
Reappraisal of influences and like musical goals and just, yeah, I love it when artists expand like that.
Yeah. He's definitely moved, you know, been moving forward pretty much his whole career. And that's why I think it's one of the things that I think is odd about his lack of stateside. You know, he tours the States every once in a while. Every couple of years he'll tour the States and he'll play like 8 cities, you know. And like, you know, for New York people, he plays like Irving Plaza. You know, that's kind of like the size of the places that he plays as opposed to like stadiums. And none of it is really like, it's not overly British. It's not like, it's very, because of its affiliation with sort of like American music and soul music and folk rock and stuff like that, it's very accessible. So it's kind of frustrating. It's not like it's a hard pill to swallow, you know? So
I would only read about, like, when I was growing up, I'd only read about him in Uncut, you know? And it's exactly what you're, talking about. It's like, yeah. I was just, you know, the Mod Father, all that stuff. Like, that's the only time I would ever hear about him. Be like, who is this guy that is, seems like one of the greatest songwriters of all time that I've never heard any of their music.
He, for better or worse, he is sort of responsible for inventing Britpop. You can, you know, take that however you want.
I like Blur.
I have mixed feelings about that, but.
All right. So this is Sunflower from 1993. Yeah. So once again, this is going to be a pretty different vibe, sounds like.
Yeah, definitely different from what you just heard.
Cool. All right. We're 2 for 2 so far. I'm excited here. Vocals are almost Joe Cocker-ish.
Yeah, the voice, that's a thing that I think has been a constant, is the quality of his voice has always been very, very soulful, which really serves the songs well.
There's a little Stone Roses in this.
That might just be the shirt. So that's, yeah, that's from Wildwood, which is 93. Definitely embracing a stronger guitar sound. And there's that album also has a lot of like tons of acoustic guitar on it, which is not something that you would expect from a guy who did, you know, This Is the Modern World. And again, the soul influence has always been there. And even though he has experimented with, you know, bits of prog, bits of psychedelia, stuff like that, I think that soul has always been like a constant with him. And I really couldn't resist showing off a really strong example of that. And it's one of my favorite songs of his, and it's actually a B-side, which it's one of those things where it's like, how did this become a B-side? It's like one of the best songs from that album. He did a song called The Piper, which was a B-side from 2012. It's a B-side to a song called The Attic. And again, it shows him moving forward, but never really quite losing track of like the music that he likes. I mean, he really loves just sort of paying tribute to the music that he loves in his own way. And we were talking about, I think, Amy Winehouse earlier. Maybe it was offline, but he did a, if you ever get a chance to check it out, he was on, I think, Jules Holland show about 10 years ago. And he did, well, it would have been more than 10 years ago, but he did a duet of I Heard It Through the Grapevine with Amy Winehouse, which is like incredible.
Wow.
Anyway, that's something worth checking out. But so the last song I wanted to play was The Piper, because it's a really good example of his soul chops, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Cool. He's got a hand in producing a lot of his own stuff throughout the years. And he also has like certain key production collaborators that he has worked with. Because something that I was noticing is like, there's always a couple of things that stand out as like edgy in his production, like from every era, yeah, that I think make the music enduring. Like even that last song, you could say, oh, this, sure, is like, you know, it firmly embedded in the days of Britpop, but ultimately like the guitar is way out front and like a little bit funkier and, oh, sure, more interesting than I think a lot of other Britpop. Yeah. There's always some element of the production that has an edge or a bite to it throughout each of these iterations, even the Style, sure, Council, like, you know, what other Sophisticop is going to have the bass be that like sort of clickety clacky. So, yeah, I think it's something that helps the music endure, like that edginess.
No, I agree.
Wow. So we're spanning what? Almost 35 years here. We're coming up on 2012.
Yep.
The Piper. He's got a great suit in this photo here.
Yeah, he definitely has a Charlie
he's
Watts
a dapper,
vibe.
He's, yeah, a dapper gentleman.
He's a bit of a clothes horse.
All right, let's check out The Piper. The right amount of like cool details too. Stop. doesn't miss a beat.
It almost sounds like a cover of a song that you have never heard.
I was thinking the same thing. There's something like familiar and
very
and,
familiar.
Yeah, nice yeah. about it.
I think that another thing that I think is worth noting is that on the rare occasion that he does come to the States, I always tell people, he still puts on a great show. He's quite a showman, always has a great band with him. And again, the good thing about being a fan in the States is that you're going to get great seats if you go see him, because he's going to play in a relatively small room. And I like to think that in terms of his popularity, when you compare his popularity in England to his popularity here, one of the comparisons I've made is that he is popular in the UK as, say, Tom Petty is here. That's sort of like the yardstick. Tom Petty's one of these people, everybody knows him. He's a household name. Almost everybody can name a couple of his songs. And that's the way it is in the UK, is that he's just like, you know, he's pretty much a superstar. And I think, you know, Will, I think that's one thing that they got right over there, you know, when you think about it. But still making music. That was, you know, that song that you just heard is like 12 years old. Still making great music. And I think the fact that he's experimenting and doing a lot of different things and doing some kind of weird stuff and doing some somewhat experimental stuff shows that, you know, he's in his 60s. It's kind of like Scott Walker in that sense, where it's just like,
they're always growing.
You know, I'm old, always growing. The Jam have never reunited in the past 42 years that they've been apart. And that's what he wants. He's like, I don't believe in nostalgia. So anyway.
They sound very different, but it sort of reminds me a little bit of Paul Simon, you know, where he, it seems uh-huh. like, I mean, I know he's retired now, whatever that means, but like he is, seems like he's having more fun now than he has in like decades.
To that extent, the Paul Simon comparison, it also applies to the fact that if you hear a Paul Simon song that's come out in the last couple of years and you hear like Sounds of Silence, it's like you can
two different
draw
universes.
A line between the two. It's like two different universes, but it's the same guy, yeah. obviously. And part of it is the voice. Part of it is just the, you know, the songwriting quality. But I hope if I make, you know, one new fan, he's someone
me.
I've...
I didn't know about any of this. I'm going to check this shit out. I've loved all this today.
He's someone I've always been big on promoting, because, you know, I like to champion a lot of music that's super weird, and I get that it's an acquired taste. But there's nothing weird about him. I mean, he's very much just kind of like a really good rock star when you get right down to it. So
awesome. I really enjoyed all these tunes. They were all distinct and different. I like how there's all these different periods. I had some fun homework to do.
Can I tell you my favorite Paul Weller song? That's Entertainment, The Jam. That's the first song I heard from them. And I have such a soft spot for it, because it was like in that period, yes, where I was like reading Uncuts in college and being like, it just sounded so exotic, because I'd not heard much like it. I heard The Clash and the Sex Pistols and that stuff.
Which is a lot like that, you know, and that's the thing is that, you know, that's the thing that is kind of frustrating. It's like, you like London Calling, trust me, you like The Jam.
It is. I feel like it's a little bit more, and I don't mean this as a slight against either of those bands, maybe against Sex Pistols, but like, it's just a little bit more left of center, And if even though they're called The Jam, they're more song oriented, I think. It's less like sort of funky sometimes in The Clash it's like, you know, these are always complete songs, and that sometimes might not work in their favor,
right,
in the American theater.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I don't think that there's anything that would necessarily repulse American audiences, because it's, I mean, some of the early Jam stuff, it is a little bit, the lyrics are, you know,
oi,
Thatcher, oi, you know, I mean, it's, you know, that has a limited shelf life in the States maybe, but yeah. Well, cool.
Wow. No, I love this.
My work is done.
We've definitely learned something today. We've learned more on this episode than we do in most.
Yeah. This is a big mod episode today. We got mods on the brain.
That's right. You know, when you mentioned The Who, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. Perfect segue. Okay.
Serendipity. I'm sorry, we got to wrap up. This has been a wonderful discussion for my Monday night. But I'm curious, as we come to plugs, if anybody has anything they want to share, anything they got going on.
Chris sounds like he's always got a million pieces in the pipeline.
Well, by the time it comes out, those things, the XTC thing will be out.
Oh, sweet.
And the Queen thing will probably be out. So
right.
hope we get people to take a listen to those two very different albums.
Awesome. I got a new animated music video coming on March 22nd for my recent single, Rebuild the Circus. Maybe my favorite music video I've ever gotten to help produce. So I'm excited to get that out in the world. The single, meanwhile, is available for streaming, so enjoy that. Then, Lear, you got any new music to share? Any news in the works here?
New single, Overnighter, coming out on April 1st. You'll be able to pre-save it soon. I don't know the exact date, probably a week before. But yeah, it's the first track off the upcoming Space Bomb produced EP, and I cannot wait for you to hear it.
Noish. And you there, listener, if you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, go ahead and subscribe so you never miss a future episode. You can follow Losing My Opinion on Instagram, TikTok, or
X.
Twitter.
Sex.
And Quadrophenia, God damn it, Quadrophenia is a great, great Who album. Don't fuck with Quadrophenia.
Bellboy!
I gotta get running now. Keep my lip buttoned down. I think about that song all the time.
I'm going to listen to it in its entirety tomorrow.
I could be wrong now, but I don't think so.
That's perfect. That's the perfect take on that catchphrase for today's episode. Chris, as always, thank you for being here. We can't wait to have you back
thank
for that
you, man.
Idea that we have edited out of this episode. So the listener.
I would love to participate. And once again, this has been an absolute joy. So thank you so much for bringing me back.
You always bring so much love to the topics you bring in. I think that's very apparent.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. You're always trying to shine light on things people should like. And we don't always do that on this show.
We often do the opposite.
Doing a great...
sometimes you shine light on things that you hate, which is also...
Yeah, this is always... This
and
is
that's
always,
fine. I'm going to be more hateful.
You should. That's what I was going to say. I was going to come around and encourage you to be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck all you guys.
Fuck the album, Tommy. Fuck the Who Sells Out.
And on that note, we will see you next week. So long, suckers.
Tommy.